Discuss your truth coming in here at the 4 o'clock hour. Shortly, we'll be have Anthony Mueller joining the program. Rebecca Ross will be joining us at 5 o'clock hour. And last week, folks, Tom Hartman joined the program to talk about his, I believe this is the fourth installment of his, I believe it's a 7-book series. I may be incorrect on that. But anyway, it's another installment. The foreword is by Ralph Nader. The Hidden History of Monopolies, How Big Business Destroyed the American Dream, New York Times bestseller. Tom Hartman, he has joined the program here now 3 times. His next installment will be coming out in spring. I would anticipate that Discuss Your Truth might be lucky enough to be receiving him again for a 4th time. We'll see here in a few months if that happens. I likely see that happening. December 20th, 1787. December 20th, 1787. Philadelphia, when James Madison sent him a draft, Jefferson, of the new U.S. Constitution that they'd worked out that summer and fall in Philadelphia, Jefferson's response was blunt. Again, December 20th, 1787. I will now tell you what I do not like. First, the omission of a Bill of Rights, providing clearly and without the aid of sophism for freedom of religion, freedom of the press, protection against standing armies, restriction of monopolies. I'm going to repeat that. Restriction of monopolies. Continuing. The eternal and unremitting force of the habeas corpus laws and trials by jury in all matters of fact triable by the laws of the land and not by the laws of the nations. Every item except the restriction of monopolies made its way into the Bill of Rights. Why? Didn't the restriction of monopolies make its way into the Bill of Rights? Perhaps. Because those controlling the banking in 1787 with strings internationally entwined, i.e. George Washington owning shares of the Bank of England during the American Revolution. This is fact, according to a publication out of Harvard. You can find that on my website, iantrachea.com, under your tabs articles. The Bank of England is sovereign to England, which means it's not English, folks, across the pond there. The Bank of England is not English. It does not represent you. It controls you. Yes. Yes, in many, many, many ways. It resides in the Corporation of London, otherwise known as the City of London, which is a federal district outside of what you would know as London, Big Ben, Buckingham Palace. Yes, the Bank of England. The City of London is a sovereign parcel land to England. It's not British. It's Roman. It's Roman. It's Roman. What's the one constant over these centuries, Americans? Since you're so intelligent. Since we are so intelligent, aren't we? What's the one constant? What's the one constant in power throughout all the creation of all these different countries? I mean, even Germany, the last stronghold of this empire, formerly. England, France, Russia, Soviet Union, America, Mexico, Canada. What's the one? The one constant, folks. Starts with an R. It's called Rome. Rome. Rome is the one constant that was a power prior and still is a major international power. So the United States are the new kids on the block, aren't they? Aren't we? We're the new kids on the block. And those freedoms that Jefferson was talking about to Madison, those freedoms are being infringed on at an incredible pace. And simply, really being destroyed. Donald Trump nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize for his interaction in Middle East peace process. Is it a ploy? Is it a ploy coming up for the election? I mean, regardless of how you stand on the side, folks, will you respect whoever sits in the White House? Does it even matter? Yeah, I mean, what you really should be paying attention to is whether your Federal Reserve, established in 1913 under Woodrow Wilson, whether your Federal Reserve is a legal banking organization that represents you. And my admonishment is that you investigate it. I urge you to consider, folks, that like the Bank of England, it does not represent, like the Bank of England does not represent the British people, the Federal Reserve does not represent the American people. It constrains the American people, enslaves the American people. You look at Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution, that calls for Congress. That gives Congress the power to print and coin, using the terminology properly, money. It does not give it to a private organization, i.e. the Federal Reserve. And I just wrote, and this quote is from The Hidden History of Monopolies, Tom Hartman. He's the one that wrote it. He's the one that wrote it. I just read this in 1787. Jefferson was worried about monopolies. British West Indies Company was one of them. It was constraining tobacco trade in the colonies. Okay, monopolies were an issue then. They are an issue today, and they're destroying your freedoms because you don't have any power over your money. And the United States federal debt is, what, 26? Is it $26 trillion? $26 trillion. Yeah, like I mentioned last hour, Microsoft has a patent to run a cryptocurrency. So now Microsoft is getting into the game. The currency game. The currency game. What does a computer engineer care about? Wait, let me say it. Money. Oh, no, Ian. No, hold on. No, he cares about my health. Yeah, he's older now, he's mature, and he wants to help me. Yeah, he cares about my health. Yeah, he's worried about my health, Ian. Bill Gates, yeah, Microsoft, yeah, but he doesn't own Microsoft anymore. There's no interest there, Ian. No interest there. What happened to Steve Jobs anyway? So, you know, not to pick on Bill Gates, but you know, Bill Gates evidently is known to say that he wants the entire global population vaccinated. Okay? And if you're all masked up right now and you're listening to this and you got a mask in your face, you gotta forward your thinking here and say, well, you know, why is this mask being pushed on me? And then why is the vaccine going to be pushed on me? I mean, have you been sick? Oh, sure, yeah, people have died, but hey, people die of the flu, don't they? People die from being struck by vehicles, don't they? People die. Period. People die. But does that mean you've got to live in fear because someone else is telling you that you should be living in fear? No, it doesn't. It does not. So maybe just read this, ma'am, okay? Let me just read this for your consideration. This is a photo, picture it, okay? This is a photo of Bill Gates, and it says, it's simple. I chip all of you. He has said this. Okay, unless the videotape and the audio tape that I've read and heard have been manipulated. I've seen clips and heard clips of him saying he wants everybody on the planet, this is Bill Gates, vaccinated. Okay, it's simple. I chip all of you, make society cashless. We know that is coming, don't we? Sure, absolutely. I just told you, Microsoft WO20206066 patent for a cryptocurrency. The cryptocurrency is not cash, not tangible. Okay, and put all the money on the chip. What a concept. Okay, continuing the men. Then you will do exactly as you are told, or we turn off the chip and you don't eat. Keep masking yourself, folks. Keep masking yourself. Actually, I urge you not to. I urge you to take the mask off. I urge you to take that ridiculous mask off and stand up for your rights. Because what we're basically looking at are monopolies. This is a monopoly, folks. This is a monopoly. The Federal Reserve seems to be a monopoly in regards that it constrains the very way that you pay for your goods. This is the same. The denarius was the currency traded in the Roman Empire. This is the exact reason why the denarius went flat and the Roman Empire fell. Because it no longer had any real value to the actual coin. So the argument for Ian. The argument is, well, what about a digital currency, Ian? You know, doesn't that make things easy? You know, you use your credit card all the time. You use your debit card all the time. That's got a microchip in it. Well, first off, I'll tell you, I've got an issue with the microchip being in my wrist. I got an issue with having a tattoo on my body. Okay, I don't have any tattoos. Why would I have a tattoo to have, like, why would I have a barcode tattoo or like a tattoo with a microchip in it or whatever technology might be scannable? Okay, why would I do that? Sure. I'm fine. I'm fine without cash. All right, I'm fine without that. But show me the gold. Show me where the currency has intrinsic value. And America, if you're so powerful, and you're so intelligent, you're so smart, and you're so free. Yeah, I'll say that one again. If you're so free, why are you why is your federal government in a $26 trillion debt? And I don't care what side of the aisle you stand, I don't care if you're a Biden supporter or a Trump supporter, your political system is washed out, it's corrupted, and it's totally controlled by your Federal Reserve that runs itself through the Manhattan-based think tank, the CFR, called the Council on Foreign Relations. So if you want to elect someone or if you want to get a politician to do you any good, heed the words of Ron Paul. And audit your Federal Reserve, audit Fort Knox, and demand that your government show you that your currency has intrinsic value. It's called the Great Reset, folks. COVID-19, sure, it's a virus. Okay, it's a virus. Just like Zika was a virus. I lived it in 2016 in Miami. I lived it just like Zika was a virus. COVID-19 is a virus, no doubt about it. Scientifically proven, sure. Is the threat blown way out of proportion? In so much that it's got you wearing a mask because you're in such fear of it? Yes. Affirmation, confirmation, affirmative. Yes. It's blown way out of proportion. So that your middle class is attacked, demolished, doesn't work. There's a major economic swing of power that benefits and fuels the rise of your coming digital currency. and again. You may not have a problem with the digital currency. What you should have, you should have a problem with whether that digital currency literally and factually represents any intrinsic value. Because that value, folks, is in internet companies like Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, knowing everything about you and your daily habits and your spending habits. That's where the value. You are the value. You are the value. Having information about you is the value. So you're basically trading your information instead of trading anything tangible. Okay. Now, I mean, you know, prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. I'm taking this stance. Because from everything that I've researched and every way I've trained myself, this is accurate. And prove me wrong. Okay. There's no coincidence that the IMF is located in Basel, Switzerland. And there's no coincidence that Dr. Peter Beter in the early 1970s, after Nixon abolished the gold standard, which was really set into play by Johnson, I understand, was crying for an investigation into Fort Knox and an audit in Fort Knox because he was saying that the Rockefellers had hijacked the prices and sold the gold to an international hand. This is all fact of how your country has somehow survived into 2020. Somehow this country still exists. Okay? But this is a major attack on it economically right now. COVID-19 is. All my views, all my opinions, feel free to disagree. Do disagree. But prove me wrong. Okay, Anthony Mueller here. Let's bring Anthony on to the program. Professor of Economics at the Federal University of UFS in Brazil. Bring on Anthony Mueller. Bring on Space Guy here. Ian Trottier, discuss your truth. INTROTTIER.com. Follow me on Twitter, follow me on Instagram. Again, this is discussion of truth. Here every Wednesday afternoon. Shoot for that 5 p.m. Eastern Standard. Anthony.
Hi.
Hello, Anthony. Welcome to Discussion of Truth. Yes, I can hear you just fine.
Okay, great.
Wonderful to speak to you. Nice to connect with you, sir. Welcome to the program, and thank you for taking your time to join us. Anthony, would you please give a brief introduction to listeners?
Well, I'm originally from Germany, and I have a doctorate in economics. And I taught economics in Germany and in some other European places. I spent some time in Paris, and I had research projects in Southern Europe. And in the end of the 1980s, I also was a Fulbright scholar.
Yes.
In the United States and spent some time there. And then I became a chairman of an economics department in Nuremberg, Erlangen-Nuremberg, at this university. And after a while, I thought it would be nice to have another adventure. And so I went on to go, it was an academic exchange program to Brazil. And here I am still hanging around. I have a position as a professor here. And in particularly, I also am very much involved with a Mises Institute in the United States. About 15 years ago, I attended various conferences and published there. And I also was instrumental in setting up a Mises Institute in Brazil, which, to my surprise, I have to admit, has become not particularly because of me, but because of the chairman, who is a businessman, intellectual businessman, and he really promoted this institute, and we have an enormous influence and attract many readers from Brazil. It's in Portuguese. And while I was in Brazil, during that time up to now, I also spent two times as a visiting professor in Guatemala.
Uh-huh.
Where there is a university called Universidad Francisco Marroquín, which has a very good, well-established program in Austrian economics. And after that time, I also held some online courses for this university. And now they have a cooperation with a university in Sao Paulo. And so this is basically in very short words what I've done so far.
Wonderful. That's a great explanation. So you are in Sao Paulo.
Well, actually, I am in the northeastern part of Brazil, right at the sea. When I look outside of my window, I can see a large river, which is immense by European standard. It has a size almost of the Mississippi in New Orleans, but nobody knows this river anywhere else. So, and behind that river, I have a direct look at the sea. And the state is called Sergipe. It's the smallest state of Brazil, but people may have heard of Salvador. They may have heard of Bahia, and I am just north of that. I like the warm climate. And so to give you an idea, the climate here is more or less like Florida.
Uh-huh.
And it's very similar. It's very similar.
Well, that's
in terms of climate.
That's something that we enjoy as well. That sounds like a large river. I am familiar with the Mississippi. And how does that compare to the Amazon?
Well, the Amazon is something else. When it gets into the sea, if you stand at the border of the Amazon, you cannot see the other shore. I mean, that's quite a different.
So that's miles.
Yes.
It's plural.
It's not only long, longest rivers, but also towards the end, it's immensely broad. Yeah, it's incomparable in this respect. Yes.
So you're actually next week we'll have I hope I'm not mistaking this. I believe JP is a Fulbright scholar to Brazil as well, and he took his time to study anthropology and the indigenous folks of Brazil. He's based in Florida. He's got a PhD from Oxford, and he joins the program fairly frequently. So
okay,
I'm pretty sure it's a Fulbright. Maybe it's not. Maybe I'm mistaken that. Maybe it's not Fulbright, mm-hmm. but I think it was a Fulbright scholar. So Anthony, how's Brazil dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, terribly.
Uh-huh.
In a way that Brazil has been copying the errors of Europe and later the errors of the United States. That is typical, I have to say, of this country, which has among its leadership a tendency to copy the worst aspects of Europe and the United States. It's almost a natural tendency. If these Europeans do something crazy, or the Americans, the Brazilians become to like it.
Uh-huh.
And there were voices here, strong voises, of course, the Mises Institute included, but also the Brazilian president himself, who wanted to avoid this craziness of the lockdown.
Yeah.
But the whole case went to the Constitutional Law Court, to the constitutional lord, a kind of Supreme Court here, and all of these members of the of this court are still from the time of the long period of leftist leadership in Brazil. So they gave the authority, the full authority, to the governors of the country. And especially there you can see that those who oppose the policy of the president were quite glad to impose strict lockdowns, quarantine, yeah. It's called here. Yes, and I mean, imagine how the United States is suffering, how Europe is, let's say Germany is suffering from this lockdown. Now take a country like Brazil, what this happens. What this meant. I mean, I know a lot of people when I go out, sit at a bar, they come by and sell some peanuts to me. I know they live from day to day, yeah. For the subsistence and so on. And of course, they had no business to do at all. Today, I used Uber driver, and he told me that about 2,000 in this small place where I am, 2,000 Uber drivers had to quit. Because there was no demand anymore for their services.
Wow.
No?
Yeah.
So it's really a tragic situation. And the complete absurdity is, and I did check myself, I went into the local registers of number of mortalities.
Yeah.
And there's no excess mortality other in Amazonia, for kind of special reasons there.
Indigenous?
But, well, let's say the health system is not the best up there.
Uh-huh.
While in the southern part, there were almost no casualties in a direct way detectable. And my daughter yesterday had a small health problem. So I went with her to the local hospital here, to the emergency, and just to have a look at it. It was not very, very problematic. There was almost no waiting line.
Interesting.
Just to give you a concrete indication. Yes, of course, you had to wear a mask and you had to stand there with distances and all these other absurdities.
Yeah.
Yes, but de facto, in terms of people dying as it was told that would happen.
Right.
There is nothing in extreme here. And as of now, we know that the numbers are exaggerated. Even official agencies now say that maybe 6% of the official number have really died by or through COVID. But cases is not a term. Yes, here when you open up the local the national TV station, they fire you with number of cases. Then I go out and ironically I ask people what is a case? Casos it's called here. They don't know how to define it. It's one of the greatest absurdities that I have ever lived in my life, and I have experienced quite a few things.
Yeah, and by the way, your English is excellent. So I'd imagine your Portuguese is also great. Unfortunately, I don't speak any Portuguese, pero hablo un poquito de español.
Okay.
So you speak Spanish?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So anyway, Anthony, in reports in the United States from the outlook in Berlin is that people have began to speak out in Berlin and protest these same numbers that these experiences that you're saying, and that they're going to hospitals, there's nobody at the hospitals, there's this emergency being portrayed over the mass media is skewed, and it's they're padding these numbers. The CDC here in the United States had alluded to this 6% number that you just mentioned. What is from your view in Brazil? What do you see happening in Germany? And if you're familiar with what Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has said recently in Germany, how do you comment on that?
Well, I live outside of my home country quite for some time now. I still observe regularly the events, and in particular these recent protests attracted very much my attention. So I deliberately spent the whole weekend watching not TV but YouTube, and I really made enjoyed going from this channel to that channel and listening into this group and that group, and it was an amazing experience. What can one have now? So I actually said to myself, I have a better view of what has happened than those people who were there who had just one look at the situation. And then when I later read the official news, it was a shocking experience, because they obviously, blatantly lied about the number of people there. It was just grotesque. Yeah, I mean, instead of guessing 100,000, they said 17,000.
Right.
So, and it could have been more than 100,000, maybe, because there were also in this area other parades, and at that time the press spoke of 1 million, and so on, like the musical parade and so on, or the when Germany won the championship in soccer and so on. So these they always told about 1 million people, and suddenly it's 17 people. And I asked a good friend of mine who lives in Germany, who lives in Berlin. I said, tell me about the exact distance between these points you could see. And he said, okay, he fully confirmed my assessment. And then came these other stuff that they and you could see on YouTube and other channels filmed by private people who opened up a live channel, and I could switch from one to one. And in the media, they talked about radical right-wing, even Nazis, and other strange people who have strange views. And I mean, the discrepancy was so enormous. I mean, you always have some kind of bias and so on. This is regular. When you watch your own show, that a musician you like, or a certain sports game, you always have a preference for your team and so on. Maybe you see something a little bit different than other people, but the discrepancy was just too wide, and people who were there said the same thing, that it is actually outrageous, and this makes one ask, what is really going on? Yes, because you have this similar phenomenon in United States, not just in this case in Berlin, and you mentioned Robert Kennedy Jr., who held a fantastic speech there, a very good speech, a solid speech, well done, well performed, with a big audience. And it was, I don't remember that it was mentioned in the top TV stations in Europe. And this is absurd. No? It's absolutely absurd. There was a small incident close to the Reichstag, which attracted all attention, and still there are rumors what was really happening there. But it was of no importance at all. The people just moved up the stairs and had a photo session. And they called it storming the Reichstag. I mean, we live in really strange times.
Yes. Right.
I mean, when you watch a big event, let's say the fall of the wall in Berlin, you still see crazy things and amazing things, but it's somewhat understandable, rational. You can understand what is happening. But This is no longer the case that has been going on basically since March of this year.
Right. So from your view, and it sounds like the Brazilian people are having the same, like you said, they're having the same type of challenges in the United States. In your view, let's insert Bill Gates. Okay, so we know Bill Gates created Microsoft. He dropped out of Harvard. It became a multi-billion-dollar company. He stands as being his wealth is almost just about doubled within the last 10, 15 years. A recent Forbes reading I read had his value is net worth at over $100 billion now. This is just outrageous, and it increases. Well, in your view, as someone who's created Microsoft, in your view, why is it that he would be calling for a universal vaccine? Do you have any comments on that, Anthony?
Well, of course, I have no direct relationship with Bill Gates. And actually, decades ago, I had some kind of admiration for him, how he set up this business and so on. But also before he entered the media as a big propagator of vaccine and so on, I heard once in a while some indications that he is, and let's call it this way with some reservation, a person who wants to reduce the number of people in the world. And he connects that with health, and as I could take from his lecture where he talked about in a longer lecture about his ideas, and my understanding was that when people have a vaccine, when children survive, there will be an automatic tendency to have fewer children. But this is already happening. I mean, you do not need a big program to initiate that. Uh-huh. Yes, you have this all over the world. And even when you look at United Nations statistics, yes, you have still this curve upward. Of course, the population is still growing, but the rate is already falling. So it will only take maybe a couple of decades, and the big curve, the curve of the absolute number, will also fall. I mean, in economics, I always have to deal with these processes of growth curves, and so you have to look at the annual change, which precedes the overall tendency. And when we create prosperity through capitalism and globalization, we actually get automatically this effect. I mean, one just has to look the numbers in Europe, for example, where the reproduction rate is already less for the native population to maintain the population. So actually you have a shrinking of the number already going on. And this would naturally happen also in part of the developing world. And by the way, even though Brazil does not count as a highly developed country, in Brazil you have this effect. Brazil, the population of Brazil is almost already in this state of not growing very rapidly anymore. In a decade, there will be a stop of the population growth, and then already will become the decline already. So Brazil is a perfect example, and they had no policy of population control. They had no Chinese model, and even as to abortion, they are very strict. So it was just the natural growth. The education of women is very important. Now, of course, in my class, half of the students are girls. and women. And so you have all this naturally what Bill Gates seems to do in a mega effort and bringing down the world economy. I mean, this is absolutely mind-boggling. No, it makes no sense. Yes,
right.
Even in his own category, because when people are poor, yes, they then maybe his vaccine has another purpose. I don't know.
Right. So something that I've shared with listeners is a Microsoft patent, and it is addressed as WO2020060606, which is found on the World Patent Registry, and it was awarded to Microsoft, I believe, in February of this year, and that is to run a cryptocurrency. So Microsoft is now getting into the cryptocurrency arena. So my connection is that perhaps, without seeing it on paper, that perhaps Bill Gates would have continued interest in the company that he started, and perhaps he would be having an interest in a digital currency. For listeners to understand, you have written a series of you've written a volume of four volumes of titled The Great Financial Crisis of 2008, which we know from outwards appearances was really initiated by the subprime mortgage crisis. But this is then your more recent book is Beyond the State and Politics: Capitalism for the New Millennium. What we've got here in with the COVID-19 pandemic, as you have alluded to, is a major coming, in my view, and I'd like you to expand on this, Anthony, is a coming major global economic shift of power. Please talk about that, if you would, for a moment, Anthony.
Well, I studied recently because I after I published this article about from lockdown to the new to the reset, a lot of mail people who wanted to know more. So I set about, and in terms of a resume to resume, one can say the idea of a kind of technocracy. Mm-hmm. Is actually very old. One can go back to Plato, who wanted an hierarchical, organized, not order, but organized in the sense of hierarchy, of an organized state where the wise, now we call them the experts, are at the top, and you have all ordered, controlled, organized down to the children who are not part of the family, but are educated fully by the state. And there have been various attempts to initiate something like that. And of course, it has always failed. It will naturally fail because it is against the human nature. And but let's say more or less in the 19th century, 18th century, 19th century, actually already in the 18th century, came the idea to a new flourishing. And it was called the perfectibility. In French, it was mainly the French philosophers who wanted to bring forth in the move of the Enlightenment, the idea to make man perfect. And there were some warnings about it. They were called more conservative or religious group and so on that were opposed, but they were called old-fashioned, traditional religious bores and so on. And in the 19th century, this movement gained another big push forward with all those aligned or around the Darwinian project, no? The forebears of Aldous Huxley, who is famous, but he had grandfather and who was already in this area, or parts of the wider family of Darwin belonged to that. And it is no surprise that for example, John Maynard Keynes was in favor for eugenics. Uh-huh. George Bernard Shaw was in favor for eugenics. And this was if I remember correctly, Keynes once said, John Maynard Keynes, the economist, famous economist, once said, eugenics is the prime topic of the social sciences. Uh-huh. Yes. And So, of course, this idea got totally discredited when the Nazis
right.
set these ideas into a horrible practice.
Right.
And so the name came out. You cannot say it any longer, eugenics. The connotation with Narcissism is just too strong. So Huxley, who was instrumental to set up the UNESCO, already tried to find another expression of the same program, and it is called a transhumanism.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Transhumanism is the same idea, to make the make man, the person, more perfect. And now there is a strange link to Silicon Valley. In 20 years ago, Silicon Valley, 15 years ago, was libertarian. I have some friends there. At that time, when I was at the Mises conferences, we always had members from the Silicon Valley, and they were libertarian. It was a libertarian attitude. Or Peter Thiel, you may know
sure.
him, Peter Thiel, sure, who said the same thing. He does not understand what had happened there. But of course, now you have this connection with these nerds, let's call them this way, of an expertocracy. So there is this mixture who finds maybe its best expression in the person of Bill Gates. But behind Bill Gates, in this sense, you have this transhumanist tradition on the one hand that goes back to eugenics, and the other is this technocracy, technological leadership. So we are the best. We Plato, in the sense of Plato, and we have the right to organize the society. We have, let's put it this way, we have to program society like we use, like we program software. And so I would say it is maybe in this context, and the indicators are quite huge in a discussion to prove it with several quotations and books and publications and acts and so on. So it's not a pure speculation.
So Anthony, in your view, is this introduction of this COVID-19 virus, which is a coronavirus, and in Miami, we experienced the Zika virus, which I think had origin in Recife in Brazil there. Is this a coincidence, or is this a natural occurring phenomena, Anthony? Or in your view, is this somewhat targeted? Would you align it more with a type of a biological instigation to sway societies globally?
Well, I cannot bring forth a definite point of view about that, but just let me tell how I saw this thing develop. First, I mean, anybody that I know who would have been asked in 19, at the end of the year of 19, 1st of January 20, would he expect that Europe, England, United States would basically take away all the fundamental rights we are used to? And in a strange combination, this drew my attention from the beginning. So they would take away all these kinds of social relationships, sports events, church service, schools, kindergarten, coming together. For example, just a crazy idea. Here in Brazil, when I buy something and I stand in line, one person after the other, I usually chat a little bit with the people to know what they're thinking about. Now you must hold a distance of 2 meters, and you cannot talk to strangers anymore. And you cannot go to the bar and have the chat. Like when I was in Ireland, I mean, these are cramped people together, and you could have your drink and you could talk about anything. At this moment, the most crazy thoughts would be spoken out, because you could always say I was a little bit tipsy or something like that. And this was humankind in this traditional sense. And so suddenly they, let's put it this way, they took it away in a short period of time without much discussion. That's a strange thing. You would think, doesn't it need some kind of going through the Congress, through the Parliament? Isn't there a need for a law to do that? Why does the Supreme Court not intervene, for example, and it's just still and so on? And then I began to look into the matter. And as an economist, I'm interested in the numbers. And I looked up, there is a fine statistics in Europe. It's called Euromomo. And they collect the mortality of most of the European states on an almost weekly basis. Now you have a look at that. And the first thing that attracted my attention, and it's very, very visible. It's like you can look at it as a chart of some kind of stock market, and you have these waves. Every year in Europe, in most countries, and when you put Europe together, it's very clear the number of people of extra or over mortality is increasing. In November, when the winter comes, and it goes on until March, and so on. You can also see sometimes this curve is relatively steep and falls down rapidly, and sometimes it is already before the lockdown. I speak of, say, 2016 or 2017, where you actually have a flattening of the curve without any intervention. Nobody talks about the big pandemic of 2017. And you look at that, and then you see, oh, that's interesting. I mean, the area under the curve that's flattened is about the same as the curve, which is very steep. And then came all this idea, we have to flatten the curve, flatten the curve, flatten the curve. And you could see they did not flatten the curve. But also, with a few exceptions, most of the peak was well inside the regular run of the health capacity. And I don't want to say that it is this corona or something like that is like a flu or is a flu, but the pattern in the statistics of excess mortality is the same. And just last week, they always published on it on Thursday, I had a look again, and it's over. It's absolutely over. I mean, these numbers are so clear. Now, in many European countries and in Europe as a whole, we have a submortality. The line, you have this statistical line of averages and certain variations and so on. But in an ironic way, you could say the people who unfortunately have died a month ago cannot die now. And the group that is much affected are the elder people, right, who also have naturally various other ailments. And sorry as it is, but that's the situation. There is an infection, and whatever you call it, it is very hard for these people who already have some kind of ailment, who are 80 years old or more, sometimes 90 years, and that's where the ailment was concentrated. But and as much as this is natural, in as much as ailment, sickness, and death is natural, so the curves fall into this natural pattern that you can see. I did not see it for the United States and did not see it for Brazil, but for Europe, you can go back for decades. And so from this point of view, I was alerted and said, what is going on here? And now, as it goes on, it is even more surprising, because the promise was we want to flatten the curve and then we stop.
Right.
Yes. And the curve is over already a long time ago, but you still have to run around with a mask.
This is perplexing.
Yes, it's perplexing. Yes.
And why do you feel? Do you feel there's just because of the dynamic of information being passed via the internet? Do you feel that accurate information is simply not getting to the right distribution channels? Why do you feel that this continues? Why is this continuing, this mask phenomena? It's almost like the toilet paper. There was this ridiculous rush in the United States for people to buy toilet paper. It didn't make any sense to me. Explain in your view that. We've got about 10 minutes more, and I've got to wrap up because I got to make time for the next guest, Anthony. And I appreciate you coming on. But explain in your view what's going on. And withdrawing and categorizing for listeners so they can kind of you know, what you've done is you've set a nice stage here with transhumanism, eugenics, which you've drawn from Plato. So this is nothing new. And then you've incorporated, of course, technocracy and the development of technologies. But why are people still running around with masks? And why are governments still mandating this?
Well, let's call it a simple explanation is that the decision makers, the prime political decision makers, made a wrong decision. And they do not want to admit having made a wrong decision. That's, so to speak, uh-huh, the benevolent explanation. And they try to go on and said, okay, we've done the right thing, and it's still a great risk. And so, and this view gets support from certain mass media. And the mass media have a strong influence on public opinion, and some of the surveys show that there are still large parts of the population that accept this kind of attitude, and one can say in doubt opt for safety. This is the benevolent interpretation. No? But let's put it this way. Let's see what is going on now. after it is obviously over. But the problem is now we are in September. Maybe they carry on this way in October. And a new wave is coming, as I said, in November.
Right.
And whatever it is, it may be the regular flu. And people go into now people go into this period full of fear. And many people have lost their jobs. Many people who spent decades setting up a business now know where to go. I mean, we have, one could say, the angst society. The angst society, angst in this sense is the right word instead of a concrete fear. And so maybe as a horrible scenario, that they will go on for whatever reason, and new arguments will be found by the statistics, because now exactly the lockdown and the social distancing and the whole morass that has been produced by the policy produces a higher rate of excess mortality. That would really be a horror scenario. And then we have to really look into what is going on. Then we have to get serious and speak up in a way which still one has in a situation of doubt.
Do you see the rolling out, if you will, the coming forth of a digital currency applied in Europe? I know, for instance, the Bank of England has recently argued over this. In regards to a digital currency, what do you see coming in the future?
Well, this is certainly in the pipeline, and it is part of obvious control. When there is only a digital currency, all your action are visible. You are observable in any aspect, and you can be removed, so to speak, from society. All they have to do is take away your code, so to speak, and you cannot even go to a shopping or a supermarket. And many libertarians are in favor of bitcoins and so on. This right. was an evolution and has very many, many good aspects. But if we have a global digital currency, I mean, we are caught. We are really caught. I mean, anything is registered. Yes, and so now you can move around with some cash and some things and so on. And it's part of a natural freedom. And bigger transactions are already done by transfers and so on, but it only takes some time to register. So if the police wants to search, it has to go into it. But when there is, other than Bitcoin seems to be pretty safe, but when you have a kind of official governmental digital currency, I'm sure that with one click, one can reconstruct your whole life, what you have done, where you have done this and that, where you spend your money. And of course, this is the next step to bring in a kind of social credit system. Yeah, so you can see, well, he spends his money for that or for that. He's not a good person. Yeah, so we cut. And it's also the same with some kind of vaccine. I don't think they will really impose a forced vaccination, but simply, okay, you don't have a vaccine, you cannot apply for a job. Ah, you don't have a vaccine, you cannot go outside of the country or travel to this in that country. So it comes in step by step, and we have all the reason to be very, very alert and observe very strictly. And for this purpose, I think all kinds of protests and demonstrations are very important, and podcasts like this is very important, and publication is very important, because still we can do it. We can do it.
Right. Well said. Wonderful contributions, Anthony. Once again, thank you for joining Discussions of Truth. To take a moment, if you would, Anthony, and share some closing comments for listeners, some closing thoughts. Anthony, are you still there with us?
Yes. As I said, we experience unusual times. Even when I look back in my life, not such dramatic as, let's say, my parents' experience, but nevertheless, there were mega events happening, and you could, after a while, get a rationality. And well, it started to get a little bit strange with 9/11, but still okay. But what is happening now must alert us very much, all those people who have a sense for freedom and human dignity. And for example, in many constitutions, the prime law, the prime value in a modern constitution is the human dignity. But it is not a very dignified way to run around with a mask, for example, or to isolate children. So it's a strong violation of one of the basic pillars of a good society, in this old-fashioned sense of a good society. What is happening now is no longer a good society.
Professor of Economics at the Federal University, UFS, in Brazil, Dr. Anthony Mueller, thank you very much for joining us. Go ahead. Your website is continentaleconomics.com.
Thank you so much.
And thank you very much, Anthony. Thank you. What a wonderful conversation, a wonderful discussion there with Anthony P. Mueller. Folks, you're hearing it right there. You're hearing it loud and clear. You need to stand up. You need to question your government. You need to question your banking. You need to question everything. It's happening globally. There is an order that's being implemented. You know, nobody knows the future. None of us know the future. But like Dr. Mueller just said there, while you still have an opportunity to protest, while you still have an opportunity to voice your opinion, do it. Do it peacefully. Okay? Looting, rioting, violence, discouraged. Don't do it. Don't tolerate it in your community. Do not tolerate it in your community, regardless of what country or wherever you live. Do not tolerate violence, folks. Do not. N-O-T. Do not. Tolerate violence, folks. Speak up. Share your opinions. Go to your city council meetings. Go to your state legislature. Go to your local, your state, your federal government. Contact these people. Share your views. Share your opinion. Express and collaborate. And we are grateful to have Dr. Anthony Mueller join us. We'll be back here in momentarily with Rebecca Roth, former airline attendant, experienced 9/11. This is Ian Trottier for Discussions of Truth, folks. Until next time, be awesome.